right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. And as promised, shifting our focus to the energy sector as we are now chatting with Dan Steffens, president of the Energy Perspectives Group. Click the link in the show notes to visit the Energy Perspectives Group website and follow along with Dan's analysis of the oil and natural gas sector, as well as all the companies he follows and the different portfolios he puts them in with all his subscribers. Dan does a great job of sharing his models and outlook on so many energy companies. I guarantee you sign up for the Energy Perspectives Group, you'll learn a lot about individual companies and figure out which ones fit in your portfolio. Dan, you shared a couple companies with us that we'll get to at the tail end of this interview that, interestingly, don't really have direct exposure to oil and gas prices. That ties into this initial conversation on the oil and natural gas prices, because largely they're under pressure, especially the oil price. As we're recording this on Tuesday, oil is around $67 a barrel. It got hit very hard on Monday. And that's a move I want to talk to you about because, look, we had Israel attacking Iran and the oil price went down by almost $5 that day. The argument being that they didn't attack any oil facilities, but look, war in these areas that are large oil producers, you would think it would cause a spike in the oil price. It went the other way. Dan, make sense of that for me, please.
Yeah, it doesn't really make sense. The belief is it came out, you know, after the attacks were on Sunday, so it was when the market was closed. And then when the traders could get to their position, they start, you know, selling off their futures contracts on before the market opened on Monday. So when it opened, it was down. And then when it's down, then it triggers a lot of computer-generated trades based on algorithms and margin calls or whatever on the funds that are long oil, and that created the thing. But it knocked the price from like 72 down $5 to like 67. And 67 is a strong support level, technically support level, and it has bounced off that three times recently. If anybody goes out and runs a one-year chart of West Texas Intermediate, you're going to see that there's been three previous dips below 67, and it almost within a few days, it bounced back and then moved back above $70 oil. I'm basing all my current forecasts for the fourth quarter on WTI averaging $70 for the quarter, which it's been above 70 most of the, you know, so far this in the quarter. We're just at the end of the first month, but it would have to stay, you know, at 67 or that if for quite a while before it would mean the average would be below 70. Now, this one thing, I think there's some paradigms that have to be addressed. Number one is, just because Israel's attacks were somewhat limited to military strikes, does it mean peace suddenly has broken out in the Middle East? I mean, you still have Hezbollah and Hamas and other Iranian proxies are attacking Israel like crazy. And I think they're committed to basically wiping out Hezbollah before they talk about any peace agreement or anything. And, you know, sooner or later, that's got to happen. And also, the other paradigm is that U.S. producers could run up production very fast. If Trump wins the election, becomes a president, he'll be, you know, reinstall this drill baby drill mentality. But the industry is much different today than it was when Trump was in the presidency the last time. That was at the very early innings of the U.S. shale boom. They were just now then drilling like crazy, drilling out to hold acreage and putting a lot of high, you know, high rate wells online. Now that we're more and more dependent on these high decline rate horizontal shale wells, you have to spend more and more capital and drill more and more wells every year just to hold production flat. And U.S. production is down several hundred thousand barrels a day from where it was in December. And if you added up the first 7 months through July, you would see the average for the first 7 months is below what production was. Now, in total, year over year, yes, U.S. production will be up based on the total production for 2023. But it doesn't have much a chance of going any higher unless there's a significant increase in the drilling budgets of these upstream companies. And I don't see that happening. They are committed to live within cash flow, pay dividends and everything. So that's it. I don't see it happening.
Well, Dan, you brought up some good points there. I think that the oil market, more than any other commodity, is a market of news, noise, and narratives. I mean, there are so many. Like you brought up, the Trump is going to drill, baby, drill. It's going to increase production. If the Harris administration wins, they're going to shut it in and prices are going to spike. China is about ready to fall apart as an economy, and they're not going to have enough demand. The U.S. isn't going to have a demand if it slips into recession. OPEC is going to pressure the North American producers by producing like crazy. There's so much noise. How do investors cut through all the narratives, all the noise? Because the reality is, when you look at the price action, it's been stuck in a range despite geopolitics or all these other ideas about what's going to happen. How do we make sense of a realistic oil price target based on how you analyze the markets, Dan?
Yeah, the thing I think to get the upstream companies to increase their drilling budgets, spend more money to develop more reserves and increase U.S. production, you're going to have an oil price that's up near 80 again. And the visibility that it's going to be able to stay there. The one thing with the backwardation in the futures contract, because futures outprice, companies cannot hedge and even lock in today's price for a year, because they would lock in lower prices than the price today. So another thing to remember is the OPEC countries have national oil companies. They do what the kings and queens and king and presidents, whatever, of those countries tell them to do. In the United States, all oil field development is by private entities. I mean, they may be publicly traded, but they're not controlled by the government. And so unless there was a lot of incentive, somehow much lower taxes to go out and spend more money in the oil field or something, I just don't see that it's going to ramp up U.S. production, or anywhere really outside of OPEC, is going to ramp up. And remember, I mean, the war between Ukraine and Russia has done significant damage to Russia's ability to, ramp up production. It hasn't gone down very much, but it's going to be tough for them without, a lot more capital invested to ramp up their production also.
So, Dan, what if we just see the U.S. stay where it is production-wise, which is pretty close to all-time highs? It was recently at all-time production highs, and it really skyrocketed from 2010 up into this time. OPEC, yes, they're cutting some production, but that hasn't seemed to impact markets. If we keep at this current production rate, doesn't that mean that we could still have maybe a bit of pressure under oil?
Well, I mean, oil demand's going to go up, not as fast as it was, but EIA, IEA, OPEC, all these, entities are projecting increasing demand year after year. And historically, it's going to go up by 1 million barrels a day, 1.5 million barrels a day. Now, we did have kind of a surge in demand because, remember, it was being compared to the pandemic here. So, it's grown. Well, now we've kind of gotten back to the historic trend for demand of 1 million to 1.5 million barrels per day of increased demand. Now, so for oil demand to go down, that would mean the world's population is either going down and people are willing to accept much lower standard of living, or you're just going to have this very serious global recession that would lower demand. But right now, I don't see that happening. And even China, I mean, their demand is up. It's not increasing as fast as it was, but it's still increasing. And, I think one of the biggest problems we have right now is this election. We don't know. And people believe Trump's going to do one thing or Harris is going to do something else that's going to impact, oil supply one way or the other. We don't have a national oil company, so there's really nothing they can do directly to do it. So they would have to convince the upstream companies to go out and raise their drilling budgets. That would be the only way you get a big increase in non-OPEC production.
Well, Dan, before we dive into the individual companies you have outlined for us this time, just a general comment on, it seems like the energy equities have been more resilient to price drops than maybe what we would see in other commodities. And some people postulate that's because they either believe oil prices are going to go back higher again, or that these prices are pretty sticky and that they'll be able to protect their dividends, protect their production forecasts. And what do you think about the resilience of the energy stocks as a group?
Well, one thing, because they survived the period of, the pandemic, so 2020, 21, and 22, oil prices were much lower than they are today, and these companies survived, and they're thriving. They're doing very well at 67 or 65 or whatever the oil price is. you know, unless it goes back below 50, they're very profitable companies. And the one thing, we're kind of in this information void right now. I mean, we're recording this the last couple of days of October. So only a handful of companies, only one of our Sweet 16 companies, Matador Resources, reported third quarter results. Their third quarter results just crushed my forecast. They crushed everybody's forecast. Their production was higher. Their realized prices were higher. And it looks really good. And they raised their production forecast because they are a very aggressive upstream company, Matador, MTDR, if anybody wants to look at it. It increased their third quarter results, increased my valuation on the stock by $4 to $84 a share. And I think it's trading at like 51 or something today. So I think it's got a lot of upside. And I expect all of our Sweet 16 companies, that's my top flagship portfolio, I expect them to report third quarter results that actually beat my forecast. Because actual realized oil and gas prices for the quarter are probably slightly higher than I used in my forecast.
Well, and that's a key point, is that these companies, these oil companies, are still doing well at these current prices. And look, they're still investing in growth. I was at an energy conference recently focused on Canadian companies, and a lot of them still saying, yes, look, we're returning money to shareholders, and we're also investing in growth. So that continues to be the narrative, and these companies still continue to do well. But as you said, no, we can't have an oil price that drops into the low 50s or even below. Let's get into some of the companies then. As I mentioned, these companies that you sent over, no direct exposure to oil and gas prices. The first one being Solaris Energy Infrastructure, traded SEI. This is a smaller company for the oil space, a market cap of just over $500 million, small dividend yield of 3.6%. Stock is up quite a bit this year, though, about 70%. So we need to factor that in. Give us an overview of Solaris Energy Infrastructure, please.
Okay, Solaris Energy Infrastructure, which used to be called Solaris Oil Field Infrastructure, is a significantly different company than it was. It just closed a merger on September the 11th for the acquisition or merger of a private company, Mobile Energy Rentals. It's a private company, so they use the symbol MER, but not that. So that merged into Solaris SOI, and then they changed their name to Solaris Energy Infrastructure to better reflect the new company that they are. Now, Solaris Energy Infrastructure is a highly respected kind of engineering firm that came up with the very best pieces of equipment and methods to control frac sand at the during the completion of these wells. And there, and some of these 2 mile long laterals and stuff require 100 train cars full of sand to complete them. And so during the pandemic, they gained market share. They're like number one in the handling of frac sand at the well site, and they're a very profitable company. But Mobile Energy Rentals, a totally different company, but they provide and build independent power plants that are natural gas-fired power plants where they're taking the natural gas right out of the ground. They have to clean it up, get the water out of it, you know, it's just turn it into pure gas. And then they can put it into these modular, right-sized power plants. And the need for that, in addition to some of the upstream companies doing it, Riley Exploration Permian is now producing 100% of their electricity that they need in the field from the gas coming out of the ground, and they're selling their excess electricity into the grid. I know Diamondback's looking at it. Several of the other companies are looking at it. And I think the reason I'm recommending that, they have not reported exactly where they stand and with their forecast yet. And that's going to come out next week. On November the 4th, they're going to announce third quarter results, and there will be a lot of slides in their presentation on what the new company looks like. Now, remember, this is how you invest in this big demand for electricity for AI data centers and for crypto Bitcoin mining and stuff like that. This is a good way to invest in it. And this is a very profitable company. And I think when the Wall Street gang, the Wall Street analysts get a much better picture and are able to forecast what this thing's going to look like in 2025 and 2026, they're going to raise their price targets. So it's trading at around $13, slightly over $13 this morning on Tuesday. And I think it could go to $20, which would be another like 50 or 70% over where it's trading right now. And it pays a nice dividend already. So not a great dividend. I mean, it's about 3.6% based on today's share price, but they have every indication they're going to increase their dividends once everything stabilizes again and they get these increased revenues.
Well, Dan, we've talked about this kind of idea before in previous mergers, but it seems like you like to be in early, right after the merger has been announced, because the market hasn't really digested the pro forma company. They don't have quarters and quarters of information yet as to what the pro forma company is going to look like. So do you think this is a sweet spot, even within the sector, just to be able to pick off some of these mergers before they're, I guess, followed by as many analysts and before they're better understood, that maybe you're going to get an edge as an investor?
Yeah, well, and this is a totally different kind of company. This is not like two upstream companies that are doing exactly the same thing, you know, merging. They get some synergies by, you know, combining their back office and all that. This has actually created a whole different kind of service company. Not only is it an oil field service company, it's also going to be serving the needs of the AI companies and stuff. And I think you're going to see that they got like a backlog of $200 million of orders already for these new power plants. And that's just through like the third quarter of next year. And like I said, Solaris oil field infrastructure was, and Solaris energy infrastructure is, a highly respected engineering firm. They do a lot of work for the companies that I follow already. And I know a lot of the companies because in the Permian Basin, because they're pipeline constrained out there and bottlenecked, the gas prices are ridiculously low. I mean, a lot of those companies are paying people to take their gas so they can produce the oil. And hardly any of the upstream companies in the Delaware Basin, which is the western half of the Permian, are getting more than a dollar for their gas. So they would rather use it if they can just generate their own electricity, because oil field pumps require a lot of electricity to run 24/7. That will lower their operating expenses. But if they can then start selling excess power into the grid, that creates another profit center that doesn't exist today. So I just really like the business plan of the company. It's a very low profile company. I've been trying to get them to, you know, host webinars for us and luncheons for us, and I haven't been able to get. But this is typical. When these companies are run by engineers or geologists, scientific people, they don't really quite understand that they need to get out and, you know, sell their story to the market more. But I think there's going to be a lot of interest in this company.
Yeah, they think that the numbers will speak for themselves. And hey, maybe they will, because I'm looking over your report. And yes, you noted the significant revenue growth, but you also have some forecasts for net income really exploding from where it is. 2023 net income was about $24 million, operating cash flow about $3.18 a share. What can you share with us, or what do you want to share with our listeners in terms of the net income growth that you see this company having a few years out?
Well, just between the third quarter and the fourth quarter, they should be reporting a big increase in revenues and bottom line, because this deal is immediately accretive to their revenues, net income, and operating cash flow. But then you look forward into a full year of the new company, and we're going to looking at a tripling of the net income and doubling at least, because they did issue some shares. The deal was a cash plus stock deal, and the ownership of MER now owns like 27% of the new company. So they did issue some new shares. So the net income per shares, I believe, is going to more than double next year over year, and cash flow is going to like $4 a share. And this company, I mean, that would mean it's trading for about 3x cash flow, and it's got a pristine balance sheet, pays a dividend. It has no, you know, needs to go into the debt market much to do anything. So they can fund their growth with operating cash flow. And I do think they will start raising their dividends. So of the two companies I'm talking about, because Plains is the next one I want to talk about, this one I believe has more upside in the share price, but it does pay a small dividend. I'm just throwing that out there. So it's a classic growth plus income stock, I believe.
Well, Dan, I appreciate you breaking that down for us. And it does look like an interesting business model to kind of merge the oil services business with this energy component and possibly new revenue streams, like you mentioned. So it'll be fascinating to follow along. But let's get into the next one. Plains All American Pipeline LP traded on the NYSE under the ticker PAA. Now, this is a midstream, you know, I would say these are like the picks and shovels of the oil industry. They're, you know, the pipeline companies, this is an MLP. You know, it can actually do well even in a stagnant oil price because there's so much demand for pipeline. Walk us through the value drivers you see for Plains All American Pipeline.
Yeah, and I've been following this company for decades, really, since we started Energy Perspectives Group. It's a highly respected midstream company, one of the biggest midstream companies. They, a lot of the oil being produced in the Permian Basin goes through their pipes and is their and their storage facilities and stuff like that. So they push a lot of liquids. And prior to the pandemic, they had committed to a lot of capital growth projects. So they were spending a lot of money in 2018, 2019, and 2020 to build out their big pipeline network, whatever you want to call it, they also, if you look a map of their pipelines, it goes all the way up into Canada and covers most of the middle of the country. And another thing, they have already promised the market that they're going to increase their dividends for several years, because until they get up to like 60% of their distributed cash flow, and they are well below that net right now. So they have the room within their free cash flow generation to increase these dividends now. And I think they're going to announce very soon about a 15-cent increase in their dividend. And I think that's why, again, this is a much different company than Solaris, much different, much larger company. Now, we recommend, it's, okay, PAA, which is Plains All American Pipeline LP, that LP is limited partnership. It is traded in what is called a master limited partnership. So if you buy into PAA, you're not buying really shares, you're buying units in the partnership, which are kind of the same thing as stock. But they pay out quarterly dividends. But then also their general partner, whose only asset is really their investment in Plains AA, pays an identical dividend. They pay exactly the same dividends, but it has elected to be taxed as a C corp. It is also a partnership, but it has elected to be taxed as a corporation. So those dividends are just regular dividends, you know, fully taxable, but they are more appropriate for an IRA account. I know some people don't like investing in MLPs because you have to wait to get their annual K-1 to finish your tax return. But anyway, I take the time. They got a lot of good slides and presentation on their website to learn about. But again, I'm really recommending this because I know they are going to, and they've done it before. See, they cut their dividends way back pre-pandemic because they announced to the market, we're going to use this capital from paying lower dividends to build out our asset base. And they did it, and they're done now. So those capital commitments are behind them now. So now they generate a lot more free cash flow.
So Dan, on a pipeline company like this, a midstreamer, when they have spent the money to build out the pipelines, like you said, they just did, do they simply benefit from more U.S. production so that those pipes are full?
Yes, as long as their pipes are full, and their pipes are full. I mean, the Permian Basin doesn't really have enough pipelines, especially for natural gas and NGLs. So there's still upside for more growth. But as long as those pipelines stay full, they're just taking tolls. They're toll takers. And so those investments are all made, you know, big capital investments to build them up front. But then they're like 30, 40 year assets. As long as you maintain them, they last forever. So they're just cash flow machines, and they're really good for long-term investors that want a nice dividend. And their dividend yield is over 7% right now. So it's a real good dividend. And I think there's upside in the share price to go to like 21. My current valuation is 21, and first call's price target is 20. So there's still room to get up to that new price target. And I think they'll be raising their price target as the company raises its dividends.
Okay. Hey, Dan, very interesting. Thanks for stepping away from simply the oil and gas companies, the production companies, to talk about some of these midstreamers, some of these other companies that aren't so exposed to that price. Because, look, we're getting differing opinions on where the oil and natural gas prices are going. So if you still want to be invested in the sector, look to some of these other companies that don't have that exposure to underlying prices. Again, Dan Steffens, president of the Energy Perspectives Group. Click that link in the show notes. Dan, thanks for joining us on this weekend show. And everyone, thanks for tuning in. to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Be sure to go back through our website, kereport.com, and podcast. Just search the KE Report on your podcast player, where you can then listen to all our daily editorials and a lot of company updates that we have been posting. Everyone, please keep in touch with us, and I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.